It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire. Fire.
After over 2 years of a total war, there's nothing left standing of those cities by the shore, which they once called Gaza, part of ancient Palestine. Now just miles of rubble divided by a yellow line. There are no playgrounds left, all of them destroyed by explosives or bulldozers systematically deployed. The road banned by so many nations, but not by the Zionists. So Lockheed Martin sells them dim to help them fight the terrorists. And the children left alive.
And welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, the presidents of Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of the Congo were in Washington last week. Paul Kagame and Felix Tshisekedi joined the American president to sign a public pledge to end violence. It's been received in some quarters as a promise. The generational conflict between neighbors that's cost millions of mostly Congolese lives will end. But how far serial peace accord reneger Kagame can be trusted to work for a lasting peace this time around remains a question. Judy Reaver is a Montreal-based journalist and author. Her book, In Praise of Blood, The Crimes of the Rwandan Patriotic Front, examines the Rwandan genocide of the last century and subsequent flourishing of its primary progenitor, Paul Kagame. We talked in February about her Canadian Dimension article, Paul Kagame's Foray in Eastern Congo Leaves Thousands Dead and Sparks Fears of a Broader War. Her latest there is No End in Sight to Rwanda's War in Congo, Despite Peace Deal. Welcome back to the program, Judy.
Hi, Chris.
Well, now, Judy, your article is dubious of the Trump-engineered agreement signed last week in Washington. And less than a week later, your skepticism is proven justified. Reuters reported yesterday, quote, 200,000 people have fled their homes in eastern Congo in recent days, the United Nations said, as Rwanda-backed rebels march on a strategic town just days after Donald Trump hosted the Rwandan and Congolese leaders to proclaim peace. Judy, what does the public pledge to end violence mean now in light of this latest development?
Well, as you said, 200,000 Congolese civilians are on the move. War is raging. Rwanda and its rebel militia, the M23, have now captured a city called Uvira, which sits near the Burundian border. This is a major offensive only 6 days after Paul Kagame and Felix Tshisekedi, the president of Congo, inked a deal in front of Donald Trump. And Donald Trump bragged about how he had ended a war that he said has taken the lives of 10 million people in Congo since 1996, over 30 years. So what does this mean, this public pledge to end violence? What that was apparently, from all evidence now, is Kagame's normal, predictable use of deception as a primary strategy tool to wage war. This is the art of waging war. So pretending, he pretended he was interested in peace and lulling his opponent, Congo, and probably Donald Trump too, but lulling Congo into this false sense of security and yet at the same time preparing a large-scale offensive. So it's what the Rwandans call Kagame's Rwandan Patriotic Front use of the tactic, talk and fight. So talk, pretend you're interested in peace, but actually fight. And it's a way to buy time and actually reorganize and launch a military attack when an opponent expects it the least.
For his part, Kagame's ministry responsible, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, has released a statement saying the ceasefire violation of Washington Accords by the DRC and Burundi armies. In it, they go on to say that these ceasefire violations and ongoing attacks and fighting in South Kivu, DRC cannot be placed, the blame rather, cannot be placed on Rwanda. So they are obviously shifting the blame for everything on the other side, another tactic we've seen in other conflicts where you blame your opponent for the crimes that you yourself are committing. You have seemed to wonder whether Donald Trump was in on this or not. Do we have any indications, any reaction from the White House that you're aware of?
There is nothing that indicates to me that Washington is going to punish Kagame or impose sanctions against Rwanda or its senior entourage. But at the same time, I should be cautious. I don't think this makes Donald Trump look very good. It's very bad timing for Paul Kagame to launch an offensive less than a week after he pledged peace in front of Donald Trump and less than a week after Donald Trump bragged about saving the Congolese and saving Rwandans. So I think Donald Trump loses face. I think this is a humiliation to some extent. Do I think Donald Trump and his negotiators, Massad Boulos and others, are happy about this? No, I don't think so. Clearly, the United States under Donald Trump, I mean, you know, the United States even before Trump's administrations, have always sought leverage with Paul Kagame. And in turn, Paul Kagame has proven himself to be relevant. I mean, basically, Paul Kagame, for the last 30 years, and the president of Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, have been key agents of imperialism in Africa. They have been Washington's geopolitical linchpins. They have served the geopolitical interests of the United States. And what that means principally is access to commodities on the African continent and also ensuring to the greatest extent, and Yoweri Museveni is more key on this respect, that the Arab influence from Sudan and other places did not encroach upon the African continent, especially Central Africa, mineral-rich Central Africa. So they have been very useful to Washington. At the same time, the Trump administration sees Congo as key to challenging China's dominance in the critical resources, critical minerals supply chain. And it's in Congo that Donald Trump and the United States can get access to those minerals. They see Rwanda as continuing to play an important role, a key role in getting Congolese minerals transported through Central Africa onto ports like Mombasa and in Kenya and Dar es Salaam, and then onto the rest of the world, in the downstream global supply chain. So they want to continue to use Kagame, and they know that if Kagame's network falls apart, then there might be trouble for them and getting in that economic corridor. So it's really a hot mess right now.
Well, during the signing of this so-called peace accord in Washington last week, Kagame got up and immediately contradicted, it seemed to me, what Donald Trump had said. And he said, paraphrase, but he said, it's not for Donald Trump to determine if this peace accord will go forward in a productive way, but it's for we Africans to do that. And we, the parties the assigned to this, DRC and Rwanda. I thought that was rather startling. Trump gave no reaction, although he was on camera. He just sort of seemed impassive or possibly asleep. But I thought that was rather ballsy, actually, of Kagame to say that right there. He presents himself as an African nationalist, and he's received in some quarters as being just that. Is this the key to Kagame's survival in being able to appear to be defying the colonial interests of the West that are his sponsors, after all, publicly, while working in the interests of their corporations and so forth at the same time?
As I say, he's a criminal agent for imperialist power. He always has been, and despite the rhetoric and despite some of the early ideologies, liberation ideologies that went into maybe the founding beliefs of the Rwandan Patriotic Front that he heads, he's always been a servant to the West, and particularly Washington and Britain. And I think we can speculate, but the main problems with the scenario now, Chris, is that in this peace accord, and the protocols were laid out in June of this year, and then they were signed last week in Washington. The protocols are highly problematic and favor Washington, and the reason, and favor Kagame, pardon me. And it's unclear how and why Congo and President Tshisekedi and his negotiating team agreed to these conditions. And the main condition that is problematic that favors Kagame is that it allows Rwandan defense forces, Kagame's army, and there are up to 7,000 to 8,000 Rwandan soldiers in Congo, in addition to tens of thousands of Kagame's militia M23. So we're dealing with 7,000 to 8,000 Rwandan soldiers are allowed to stay on Congolese territory till armed groups, which they deem to be a threat, which Rwanda deems to be a threat, namely Hutu militia forces, which are in fact a fractured force and don't pose any real threat to Rwanda's security, until they are so-called neutralized. So Kagame is not going to leave Congo. He's not going to lift his defensive measures, which are enshrined and justified in these peace protocols, until all of his conditions are met. And they will never be met. Mm-hmm. He will always justify his presence, even though the Hutu militia that he has referred to is absolutely no threat. So how Congo agreed to that bogus pretext is an enigma. It's really troubling, but it's also confusing to me, unless Donald Trump and his negotiating team reassured Tshisekedi in some way and suggested to Tshisekedi that the United States would guarantee support, Washington's support for a third term for Tshisekedi. And that's what people are saying now. Tshisekedi within Congo has a number of enemies, a number of opponents who are critical of him. And I pointed out at the end of my piece that I wrote in Canadian Dimension that the Congolese negotiated very poorly in agreeing to this latest deal. And now we're seeing how Kagame not only has the military advantage at this time because his forces have taken Uvira next to on the border of Burundi, but he has the political and financial advantage because his people, his agents, and his militia and army are getting those minerals out of eastern Kivu and are selling them on international markets.
You write in your article that the U.S. brokered pact is set to legitimize Rwanda's plunder of minerals from Congo, rewarding years of war and trafficking. Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Judy Reaver. Judy is a Montreal-based journalist and author. Her book, In Praise of Blood, The Crimes of the Rwandan Patriotic Front, examines the Rwandan genocide of the last century and the flourishing of its progenitor, Paul Kagame. Her latest article at Canadian Dimension is No End in Sight to Rwanda's War in Congo, Despite Peace Deal. This is the much ballyhooed deal that Mr. Trump signed with the two leaders of the respective countries. Yeah, well, when you say that, Judy, Rwanda doesn't have the minerals and so forth needed to have a domestic mineral industry as such, when you look at the map, you see Rwanda is just this tiny little country on the edge of the massive Congo. The Congo that you write is home to the world's richest carbon sink, trillions upon trillions of dollars in estimated mineral wealth beneath it. The DRC occupies more than half of that entire carbon sink, maybe the richest nation in the world if you count it by its mineral wealth. What it seems that Kagame is expert at is garnering the weapons and the ruthlessness needed to take that wealth away and deliver it to his sponsors in the West. When you say it's a mystery why Congo is going along with this deal, you write that Congo, quote, Congo appears ready to pivot away from China's dominance in its mineral sector and has offered the U.S. access to critical minerals and investment in infrastructure projects in exchange for the USA guaranteeing stability in Congo's war-torn eastern region. I mean, when you talk about leverage, this is the kind of thing we often hear about Trump, that he despises the weak, he always goes with the strong. And it seems that the DRC is on its knees now saying, please, okay, the protection racket worked, you know, Don Donald, come and, you know, call off your dogs. And yet they seem to still be not only barking, but biting.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the M23 they have access to incredible arsenal. This is a rebel militia that, you know, is getting weapons not only from Rwanda. Rwanda controls, equips, arms, and finances this rebel militia, but it's getting arms from Israel as well. There's anti-tank guided missiles it uses, air defense systems, precision guided munitions. I mean, it's really incredible. Kagame is very, very, very powerful, but he's the leader of a very poor country. As I've written, as you just mentioned, Congo has the mineral wealth. Congo has the staggering $24 trillion U.S. dollars estimated mineral, copper, lithium, tantalum, cobalt, petroleum. It's unbelievable. Gas. This is certainly the richest country in Africa. But it is, in terms of sovereignty, perhaps one of the weakest. And I have not seen, or rather, if you look historically, the relationship between the United States and Congo, I don't think the United States has ever sought or wanted Congo to be sovereign. It has undermined Congolese sovereignty from the 1950s, possibly before. It was part of with Belgium efforts to assassinate Congo's first elected leader, Patrice Lumumba, in 1961. It's derailed Congo's sovereignty consistently. I have a book that is coming out in a few months in which I examine, among other things, Washington's efforts to or successful drive to overthrow Mobutu, conduct regime change in 1996 and 97. And the overthrow of Mobutu and the military victory that Kagame and his forces achieved in 1997 was a gateway to so many crimes, enabled 30 years of war. These are serious crimes that the United States has committed. Congo has never been able to reassert itself. It has been in part destroyed. I mean, there's a very strong civic tradition of resistance in the country, and people are educated, of course, and it still is an incredible country, but it is seriously broken. And so Kagame, a long time ago, opened up that economic corridor in the 1990s, and that's what the US was seeking. And that is what has been achieved. And despite the fact that Congo has been broken, it's still a place where the resources are pumped out, particularly cobalt and copper, but also these strategic minerals in the east, Eastern Kivu provinces, that are essential to global tech and to our modern economy. So Kagame's been part and parcel to ensuring the transport, the logistical transport of these minerals that are vital to our economy. So it's a pretty tragic story. As this, there could be a better way for everyone.
Yeah, well, that's the sentiment of the times, and of course, all the fruits of this are sown by the dragon's teeth of the Rwandan genocide that Kagame's got his fingerprints all over. Judy, we're fast running out of time, but before we go, now China seems to be on the verge of being a big loser in all this. What kind of reaction have we seen from China, if any, regarding the not only the peace deal but the continued fighting, M23 and so on?
Well, I haven't heard of any official reaction. China has a very China has incredible investment in Congo. Congo is not pleased with the level of investment that was promised and that has actually been executed by the Chinese. But I know the Tshisekedi government is upset with China, especially in the Eastern Kivu provinces, because Chinese companies and Chinese nationals are working now, apparently, with the M23 in
Oh.
getting minerals out. So there's no compunction. There doesn't seem to be any hesitation on people of any country. No one's taking the high ground here. And so it looks like Tshisekedi is saying, China doesn't have our best interests at heart, and we're going to see whether the Americans can help us deal with Kagame and bring some security. But that's not what is happening. So all bets are off, and we'll see. Hopefully, the Congolese will negotiate better in this next round. But it's really It's a very tense time, and the stakes are very high.
Wow, well, that's an explosive charge, and maybe we should have led with that, that China is accused of failing in such a monumental way and also assisting the efforts of Rwanda. That if proven, is a massive disappointment. But sadly, maybe we can talk about that the next time, Judy, and talk about that in conjunction with your book coming out. What's the book title? Do you have a title for it yet?
Yes.
Do you want to share it, or is this a secret?
Yes, the Rwanda's 30-year assault on Congo.
And that's kind of...
The crimes, the criminals, and the cover-up. And so the book is ready for pre-order. I can send you a link for pre-ordering, and it's going to be released on March 1st. And it examines not only the U.S. Conducted regime change in 1997, but also Kagame's tactics, the dynamics of war that have ravaged the Congo, and how Kagame has been protected for 30 years, the judicial malfeasance, and it ends with possibilities to address that.
Well, that sounds fantastic, Judy. Yes, I'll put the link to the pre-order down below on the page here in the show notes. Well, thanks a lot, Judy, for coming on and bringing us up to speed a little bit with what, of course, we see so little about Africa generally here in the West. And it's vital that we know what's going on, especially in light of somewhere like the DRC, where the crimes have been long-lasting and have such a devastating effect. I want to also thank Karen Spring. And since Karen and I talked a few days ago in Honduras, the incumbent president has declared that the elections are invalid. Whether that stands or not, it looks like tense times in Honduras over the next few days as well. Thanks again, Judy, for coming on, eh?
You're very welcome.
That's all I got for this week. Till the next time.
Now just miles of rubble divided by a yellow line. There are no playgrounds left. All of them destroyed by explosives or bulldozers systematically deployed. Beside the road, banned by so many nations, but not by the Zionists. So Lockheed Martin sells them dim to help them fight the terrorists and the children left alive.
Speak up.
Speak up.
Speak up.
Speak up.
Speak up.
Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territory.